You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
The Planet Football Podcast is brought to you by the SeatGeek app. The easiest way to find a great deal, pay for your ticket, and get to your seat. Download the SeatGeek app and enter our code PLANET for $20 off your first tickets. We're also sponsored by FanDuel, the leader in one-week fantasy football with more winners and more payouts than any other site. Enter promo code PLANET at FanDuel.com for a bonus match of up to $200.
I feel a little bad that I bought into the narrative a little bit about, you know, what Klinsmann's narrative about how these games were gonna be about proving a point for the Mexico game and setting things up for the Mexico game. They weren't. We didn't learn a single thing over the past week that's gonna make a difference against Mexico.
Welcome to SI's Planet Football Podcast, where each week we discuss the latest in the world of soccer. I am SI.com soccer editor Avi Krediter, joined today by SI senior writer Grant Wall and SI.com's Brian Strauss. You guys are fresh back from covering a pair of U.S. men's national team friendlies. Grant, welcome back to New York.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And Brian, in the nation's capital, how are you?
I'm good. I did not go to Boston, so I am unstained.
you are undefeated on this trip.
Untainted, yes.
Well, I guess you could say that about another person who didn't play neither of those games, and that's Tim Howard. He's back with the U.S. men's national team after a year hiatus. Jurgen Klinsmann has made him his backup to Brad Guzan.
And for Grant, now.
For now. Grant, you had the opportunity to interview him the day after the USA lost to Brazil. So now, without further ado, Grant Wall and Tim Howard.
And we're here on the SI Podcast today with Tim Howard, goalkeeper for the U.S. national team and Everton. Thanks for joining us, Tim.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Really appreciate it. We'll talk about kind of what you're working on these days with 7-Up today here in Boston in a bit. Just wanted to start off because it's in the news. The U.S. played last night against Brazil, had a tough 4-1 loss, beat Peru 2-1 last Friday in D.C. You just finished your first camp with the U.S. since World Cup 2014.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on these two games?
Lots of thoughts. You know, I think clearly these have been preparation games, a preparation training camp for what we all know is the Mexico game that looms large in a month. So, you know, it was kind of twofold. It was immediate in the fact that we had two opponents in front of us, but it was also with one eye firmly on the Mexico game.
With that game coming up against Mexico next month, you look at the results. They were mixed this week, and you know, against Brazil, Brazil's one of the best teams in the world, but it was a tough game. You got some fans who are really concerned. You got some saying, don't worry. What would you tell them?
I would tell them that, you know, they're entitled to their opinion. It was a tough game. I think there are times in football that you get taught lessons, you know, and last night was a lesson for all of us. They're talented players. They think quickly. They're quick on the counter. You know, you get a team like Brazil and you talk about all their flair. I can tell you what, they defend tenaciously. They defend in numbers. They don't get a lot of credit for that. So there's a lot that can be taken from playing a team and getting taught a very tough lesson. Trust me, it hurt.
For you, being back in camp, what was that like?
You know, it was like riding a bike. A lot of familiar faces. It was good to get back wearing the crest. It's something I love to do. I missed. And, you know, things that, you know, from my end certainly seem right. The training was good and not a lot's changed, which is a good thing.
Now, I know you had a phone conversation with Jurgen Klinsmann after the Gold Cup where you talked about coming back into the program. How long was the conversation? What did you guys talk about?
Look, I had a lot of conversations with Jurgen over the year, you know, certainly last August when I decided to take a year away. And then periodically throughout the year, we talked about results and, you know, games and just random stuff, you know, wishing him good luck. And then after the Gold Cup, our plan was always to speak at length, and it was a good conversation. You know, a lot of what we talked about, I'm not going to share. You know, what he shared publicly is fine, but you know, that's obviously a private conversation that I will keep private. But it was a good conversation. It was positive. I think we were both excited at the prospect of what's to come in the next 3 years.
Now, last week in camp, you had a comment saying, you know, I've never been a backup. And just wanted to ask, obviously you've been the U.S. starter for quite a while. You aren't right now this very second. What did you mean with what you said?
Well, it wasn't an explosive comment. I think everybody in the media is looking for that. I think to be a backup, you have to have a backup loser's mentality. I've never had that. You know, I'm a competitor. I know what it takes to start, to be successful, to win. I do that every day. So that doesn't change. My mindset doesn't change so much. So my mindset has never been to accept second best, you know, and that's what's gotten me to where I am. So it's not, like I said, it wasn't explosive. It was simply, you know, this goalkeeping battle, if you want to call it. People have been hungry for that for years and years. What they're missing out on is I've had a goalkeeping battle on my hands for the last 10 years. People just have decided not to talk about it until now. So it's nothing's changed for me.
Klinsmann came out and announced that Guzan would be the starter for these games this past week and for the Mexico game. Do you take that to mean that you could start as soon as the October 13th friendly against Costa Rica?
That's a good question. I don't know. You know, I've said, going into these games, I feel like I'm fit and playing well, and I'm ready. And I'll eventually get called upon. You know, that's the one thing I'm sure of. You know, as I mentioned, Jurgen and I had good conversations, and I think between now and Russia 2018, there's going to be a lot of games to go around. There's probably going to be 30, 40 some odd games. There's plenty of games that I'll get an opportunity to play in, and I'm excited about them. When does that come? I don't know, you know, but I'll be ready when it does.
This game against Mexico, there's going to be a ton of hype heading into October 10th. There already is. Mexico maybe has a little momentum going for them. They had a decent result last night, 2-2 against Argentina. But the U.S. hasn't lost to Mexico in 4 years.
Yep.
Where do you think the U.S. has an advantage in this game?
Well, I think, you know, everything goes out the window when the U.S. and Mexico play, you know. Current form, wins and losses, it doesn't matter. I think the game in and of itself is its own beast, which is great. You know, I think psychologically we do. We have an advantage. You know, we feel superior to them, and I think our results show that in the last, as you said, 4 or 5 years. They're a good team. We got a lot of respect for them, and I think whether they admit it or not, they have a lot of respect for us. And so it's always gonna be very interesting when we clash.
You're heading back to Everton now. It's still early in the Premier League season, but Everton's in ninth place, 5 points from 4 games. You had a good point at Spurs in your last league game. How are you feeling about Everton right now?
Feel good. You know, this team has been slowly growing. You know, we've got a great nucleus, and You know, we've done well this summer to hold on to our big players, get guys signed up, and bring in some support and some help. You know, the manager's has got his ideas firmly in place how we want to play. So we feel good about, you know, our situation. I think the start to the season's been pretty good. We've gotten some good results, and you know, we sit ninth, but the table's so tight right now. One win boosts you up the table, you know, a long way. So at the moment, things are good. And like I said, this is a good team. We've got a lot of cohesion. There hasn't been a huge turnover in terms of player personnel, which is going to help us.
Lots of interest from Chelsea in John Stones. The club decided to hold on to him. Did that surprise you? And what does it say about Everton's management and their philosophy right now?
I mean, it surprised me because of the numbers that were getting thrown around, you know. But my hat goes off to our chairman and our manager. The resilience they showed to fight off Chelsea and keep, you know, one of our star players. And I think for the first time in a long time, we've been able to do that. So it certainly was a warning shot to everybody that we're not in a position where we have to sell. Whereas in the past, maybe we were.
What are realistic goals for Everton this season?
You know, I think we're like everybody else. You know, at this point in the season, we all talk about what's realistic and what's not. I think our desire is to win a trophy. You know, we know that getting into the Champions League would be great. Playing European football again next season would be great. We'll see where that takes us. You know, I think if we're in the hunt come April or May, that's when you can start talking realistically. But it's hard to do that in September.
Now, whenever I see Roberto Martinez, the manager of Everton, on television, he's pretty fascinating. You do television now. He's good. I'm wondering, in dealing with him as a manager, do you experience that as well, or is there a different side of him that you experience?
He's a tough nut to crack. He doesn't show a lot of flaws. He's very calm. You know, he sees the game differently than a lot of other managers I've played for. He's always keeps within himself. He very rarely loses his temper, if ever. And him losing his temper is very different from other people. He's always in control of his emotions. He's always in control of our team. And it's been a breath of fresh air to kind of see a different side of management.
Switching gears a little bit here. I follow you on Instagram.
Yep.
You're a good follow. You are really into tattoos, and I've always been curious. How many do you have? Do you have a sort of guiding philosophy about them? Help me out here.
I don't know how many I have. I think usually when you get to the amount of tattoos I have, people start to talk about number of hours that you have.
Okay.
Having been tattooed, I've lost track of that as well. So I'll try and come up with a number at some point. There's no real rhyme or reason. There, you know, some things I like and I just get them tattooed. Other things I have drawn out for me and I give a lot of thought to. Other things are spur of the moment, you know. And so I'm at the point now where I'm letting some of my friends tattoo me. So I've gotten pretty far down the process.
So it's kind of like being a pilot talking about your flight hours like with tattoos. Are we talking dozens, hundreds of hours here?
It's a good, you know what, I would probably say, yeah, close to, I don't know, 75 hours at least, maybe more, 100
under the
hours.
Needle. Yeah. Holy smokes. Okay.
Yeah. It's painful.
I can imagine. You're doing more NBC games this season. You've been doing this for a while now as a commentator.
Yeah.
The longer you do it, what have you sort of picked up or learned about the keys to doing TV well?
It's been a great process. It's been a heck of a learning process. It's something that, you know, I haven't had for a long time. I learned a game of soccer, but other than that, you know, I've immersed myself in football. So, this was exciting for me because I was learning. One of the things I've learned, which I think is probably a myth, is that you can go on television and actually not be cynical and not have to hammer people. You know, I think there's a lot of bad commentators out there who just see the negative side of the game. I can honestly tell you, as many times as I've had the microphone and been in front of the camera, I've never had the urge to hammer a player, to talk badly about them. I just take what I see, and I think that's a huge myth that I've learned to deal with, you know, certainly in this last 2 years.
You know, soccer television's growing in the U.S., and I think with, you know, NBC's done a terrific job with the Premier League. I wonder how, is there a middle ground where you're not hammering someone but being potentially critical, or while also being insightful, you know, showing insight and stuff? Is that middle ground hard to find, that balance sometimes?
Yeah, no, I don't think it's hard to find. I think it's just laziness, you know. I think a lot of analysts and commentators just want to shock people, you know, and they want to be the one to talk about a top player, you know, and it becomes about them. As I said, I just think it's very simple to find what the game gives you. If a world-class player isn't having a great game, I don't think you need to call him on the carpet. I think you can say this wasn't good or that wasn't good, but you know, the potential is there in the second half, or however you decide your commentary style is. But I don't think it's as simple, you know, as just hammering people. No.
Gotcha. You're 36 now. Goalkeepers can play a long time. How long do you want to play? I don't even know how long your contract is with Everton. Do you want to come back to MLS or finish your club career in England?
My contract finishes in May of 2018.
Wow.
And at that point, I'll be done with football, you know, unless something changes between now and then, you know, I'll be 39, I'll be finished. You know, I'm going to move on to other things.
If your last contract will end in May of 2018, the World Cup is after that, but you plan on or hoping to be part of that World Cup, correct?
Yeah. Oh, no, definitely. Sorry. Yeah. I mean, obviously the season ends in May and then, you know, World Cup training camp. So I 100% want to be a part of that. That's obviously my drive and my goal. And I finished there and be done, you know, if it works out that way.
And you're doing some work here today with 7UP. So fill me in on some of that stuff you're doing in Boston on Wednesday.
Well, I'm meeting and having brunch with winners from the Gold Cup sweepstakes. And it's been a great partnership. You know, 7UP is committed to soccer in the communities, which obviously is very important to me. I think it's something that needs to be done more often, which is why I've gotten involved. And it's been a good partnership.
Cool. Well, always a pleasure talking to you, Tim. Thanks for taking some time to talk to Sports Illustrated.
Thanks, Grant. Appreciate it.
I want to tell you guys about the best new way to find an amazing deal on football tickets or football tickets, the SeatGeek app. And when you use our code PLANET, you'll get $20 off your first ticket buy. The SeatGeek app takes less than a minute to download, and it's free on iPhone and Android smartphones. SeatGeek does a ton of things that other ticketing sites don't, like aggregating from big ticket sites. Just like when you search for flights and hotels online, SeatGeek pulls in ticket options from hundreds of sellers to create a one-stop shop for sports and concert tickets. When you shop on SeatGeek, you're seeing virtually every ticket option available for that game, all on one page. No need to go anywhere else. They also have this great feature called Deal Score. It ranks every ticket on the market with a 1 to 100 value score and plots the best deals on a color-coded interactive map of the venue so you can easily identify the best ticket values in the building at a glance. Finally, SeatGeek's mobile app makes the ticket buying process seamless, easy, and safe. On SeatGeek, you can store your credit card, and once you find a ticket you want to buy, you can complete the purchase with just two quick taps. There's no faster way to buy tickets. To redeem your promo code and save $20 on tickets, download the free SeatGeek app today, enter promo code PLANET in the app, and SeatGeek will then send you $20 once you've made your first SeatGeek purchase. If you want to go see MLS matches, the NFL, college football, or the best concerts, use the SeatGeek app and enter our promo code PLANET to save $20. All right. Well, thanks again to Tim Howard for joining us. I know he's a busy guy. I got to get back to Everton. Grant, in that talk, anything you took away from there specifically?
Well, he certainly has a lot of confidence that he's going to be the number one U.S. goalkeeper again. Could be sooner rather than later. I think there is a chance he could start that October 13th friendly against Costa Rica because it'll be 3 days after the big USA-Mexico game. You know, not a lot of time between games, not a ton of attention on that game. And, you know, I could certainly see that happening.
Yeah, Brian, do you think just switching back to him like that, kind of like a flip of a switch? I know we've talked about length about this topic, but do you think that matters at all? Do you think Guzan, especially if he plays well and USA beats Mexico, is that a game he should be starting anyway, just to not mess with his head?
No, I don't think it's going to matter that much. That there may not be a more anticlimactic friendly in U.S. national team history than that game against Costa Rica, across the country in just 3 days after sort of the cataclysmic playoff against Mexico. I mean, maybe it's a courtesy to Tim Howard. He flies all this way. You know, he trains. He's put himself out there. He's recommitted himself to playing for the U.S. I mean, I can't imagine Guzan having too much of an issue if Tim Howard gets the call. And then there's more than a month until qualifying, so a lot can happen in that time.
Yeah, for sure. I guess for me, it's just, I mean, he seems unwavered, right? I mean, his mindset is he's the number one, whether that is technically incorrect or not. And we'll see if that actually comes true. I mean, I think Brad Guzan has done fine. I don't think there was anything he could have done against Brazil, really. Played really well against Peru. That double save I thought was great. So, hey, we'll see. But, hey, two good goalkeepers for the USA. If you guys out there, any listeners, do you have any opinions on the matter, definitely send us any tweets at @SI_soccer or just leave us a comment on our SoundCloud or Planet Football pages about anything Tim Howard, Brad Guzan, or the U.S. men's national team. And that's, we'll keep it here. On that topic, these two friendlies, they beat Peru, they get absolutely demolished by Brazil. Brian, you have written something on Planet Football that I think a lot of people aren't necessarily taking that same tack, but it's that these friendlies, they don't necessarily indicate anything one way or the other. They beat Netherlands and Germany, they flop in the Gold Cup, they come back on Peru and then get smoked by Brazil. That doesn't necessarily mean they're going to get smoked by Mexico also.
Yeah, no, I'm increasingly convinced that friendlies, especially friendlies coached by Jurgen Klinsmann, are about a moment in time. They're about the players that are available that day. They're about whatever Klinsmann's mood happens to be. And you just look back through the course of his time as coach, and they really don't ever tell us anything about anything. They aren't an indication of what's going to happen going forward. I mean, like we mentioned in the piece, I think it was Paul Carr at ESPN who came up with this. I mean, Klinsmann started the same lineup two games in a row only twice in 75 or so matches. So he's not looking to establish continuity. And there are too many times as the national team coach that a lack of continuity is thrust upon you. I mean, you get these guys in once a month or so. Look who he was missing this time. All the talk about using these friendlies to finalize and fine tune and prepare and narrow down options for the Mexico game, and then half his first choice players weren't there. So what are we going to get out of that? What sort of chemistry is going to be developed when half of the guys you think you're going to want to start aren't even in camp? None. The answer is none. And so, yeah, he went a little overboard against Brazil. There were just too many things on the field that were never going to work. And it would have been nice to have seen him try a few things that may have worked just to make the score a little bit more respectable. But in the end, a month's going to go by. These guys are going to go back to their club teams. They're going to eat home-cooked meals and train and forget about the Brazil game. And they're going to come back a month from now. Probably someone's going to get hurt between now and then, probably a hamstring. And it's just going to be a different group of guys with a different mindset and a different opponent and a different goal. And I'm done sort of looking at friendlies as the harbinger of anything, especially under this coach.
I agree with a lot of what you're saying, Brian. I don't want to go totally to an extreme and say these friendlies mean absolutely nothing, because I do think if you look at Klinsmann's tenure over time, I do think winning a friendly at Italy and winning a friendly at Mexico, I do think there was some sort of mentality that those wins helped establish, that did help the USA in World Cup qualifying for the US to get a result in Mexico. And I think there is some value in that. I think there has been some value in Klinsmann's January camps every year for giving us maybe a new face. This year it was Giassi Zardes, who, if you look at the impact Zardes has had this year, I think a lot of those are friendlies that he has had a role in. And He's going to have a role in this USA-Mexico game. And over the years, we've seen other guys from January camps. Jeff Cameron and Graham Zusi are two guys that stick out for me. Omar Gonzalez was one. Guys who use that camp to become members of the full team for competitive matches. That said, I think your greater point tends to stand. I think we want to get meaning out of these friendlies, and you know, there has to be a reason that we spend the money to go there and watch these games, and maybe there's not a lot at a specific one sometimes. And I think these games against Brazil and Peru might highlight that. You know, when it comes to this Mexico game, it's of such a greater magnitude than the Brazil game that you end up just kind of wanting to talk about that. And it brings me back to wishing there were more times between World Cups that the U.S. had really competitive games that mattered. Like this USA-Mexico game qualifies. Gold Cup, I don't know.
That's why the Confederations Cup is important. You know, that's why this Mexico game is important, because it is an opportunity to play those meaningful games. I think you make a good point about the what's the best way to put it? Sort of the gradual accretion of experience you get through these friendlies. Zardes is a good example, right? I mean, you know, Zardes has played multiple friendlies with the national team, has many games, not many, but a good number of games of experience now, and so he's going to be a bit more comfortable against Mexico than he would be otherwise. And yeah, maybe the friendly win at Azteca and the win over Italy and Genoa, things like that, plant seeds of confidence that pay dividends later on. But to look at an isolated 90 minutes in a friendly and try to take tactical and personnel answers away from it, I think is kind of hopeless, because you don't know if these players are going to be around. You don't know if they're going to play the same position. Other players are going to come in. So over time, over months, over years, does playing friendlies amount to something? Sure. But a given friendly as a sign of something to come in a future game, I just don't see it. And I feel a little bad that I bought into the narrative a little bit about, you know, what Klinsmann's narrative about how these games were gonna be about proving a point for the Mexico game and setting things up for the Mexico game. They weren't. We didn't learn a single thing over the past week that's going to make a difference against Mexico. And as I said in the column, if Klinsmann wants a blueprint for Mexico, look at the games they've played against Mexico. Look at the way this team lined up against Mexico. Look at the players who did well against Mexico. Omar Gonzalez is one that immediately comes to mind. It was fabulous in the 2013 qualifiers, has started each of the past four games against Mexico. You know, don't look to what happened in Brazil. Don't look to what happened against Peru. Look at what's worked against Mexico and stop trying to experiment and be the smartest guy in the room and go with that.
That's fantastic.
I'm going to take a sip of coffee now.
Man, that's before your coffee. God. At a certain point, though, Klinsmann can't be off the hook entirely for these two games. We can't just say, look, they're friendlies, they don't matter, so whatever he did doesn't make a difference. I mean, he essentially torpedoed Alejandro Bedoya against Brazil. He put him in a position to absolutely fail, then went on national TV, threw him under the bus, ran the bus back over his head, and then doubled down in the post-game press conference.
We just don't see Klinsmann ever taking accountability publicly for making a mistake. The closest thing you'll ever see is him pulling Bedoya in the first half for a non-injury sub. That is the classic admission by a coach, I screwed this up. But he didn't say that at halftime on ESPN.
Not to blame the player 10 minutes later.
And to come on and basically throw Bedoya under the bus, yeah, that's uncool. And not deserved by Bedoya, who said after the game he had never played this position as a professional. And even heading into the game, when the lineup came out, everyone in the press box was like, what's that about? That's not going to work. Like, you just knew this would happen, and it did. And it was a little bit like in 2010 against Ghana, obviously much higher stakes in that game at the World Cup, when Bradley started Ricardo Clark instead of Maurice Adu. And you see the lineup, and the very first reaction is, that's not going to work. And it didn't. And there was a first half non-injury sub. It's pretty rare to see it happen, but that's what it felt like.
Ricardo Clark at least played that position at times.
True. True.
No, I agree. This is, you know, I think Klinsmann's 2015 will be defined on October 10th. If they beat Mexico, no one will care about Brazil. No one will care about Peru. People will even forget about Jamaica. his 2015 will be defined on October 10th. If they lose, he deserves every bit of criticism and pressure that he will get, because he did not set this team up to win that game. But yes, I am absolutely, we've all sat through the press conferences. I'm fatigued and frustrated by his ability to scapegoat everything and everybody and really never hold his hand up and say, my bad. He blamed the referees for their loss to Jamaica in the Gold Cup semifinal. He blamed Bedoya last night. He criticized certain players after the World Cup last year. I'm tired of it. And whether he's a good coach or a bad coach or the right coach or the wrong coach, part of leadership is to hold your hand up and say, and you see coaches in MLS, you see coaches around the world do this all the time. You know what? This one's on me. I should have prepared my guys better. I'll do better next time. I learned my lesson from this. Shouldn't have done that. I would love to see that from Jurgen, I think. And I think he would generate a bit more support if he did.
I would like to see it too. I am starting to wonder if it's more of an American sports thing, in not just soccer, but other sports especially, for coaches to say, this one's on me. I used to cover college basketball. Roy Williams at Carolina, if they lost, had a habit of coming out and saying in the press conference, I was out coached tonight. And I don't even know if he believed that, but he said it. And he said it because he knew that would... it would go on him, in a sense, publicly. That was what would be written. And players love that. They love you when you do that. And I don't see that as often in European soccer from Europeans. Louis van Gaal never raises his hand and takes the blame. And it's maddening, because you're not perfect. And don't just throw players under the bus. I was surprised Mourinho recently, because he has a history of actually being a rarity over there, of a guy who does take blame. But he called out some of his players.
That's who popped in my head when I said what I said, but you're right about Van Gaal. Absolutely.
I think it would do Jurgen Klinsmann some good. He's in a position of security, in my opinion. His boss came out and said, you will not be fired if you lose against Mexico. So why not? It would do some good, not just with fans, I think, but with his own players.
Oh, yeah. I think it would totally win some favor back if it has been lost.
He doesn't care. He doesn't care if the locker room is behind him or not.
That's what it appears like when you hear some of the things that he says. But also to be in that kind of Teflon place, like, what's the harm in just saying, sorry guys, it's on me.
This is the truth. Jurgen Klinsmann operates in the comfort zone that he denies his players. That's a fact. And as far as throwing, as far as blaming players publicly for defeat, for Jurgen, that's just more of the cold water. That's the cold water. That's the pressure. That's the crucible. And if you can't handle it, well, then you're not a world-class international. So that's how he justifies it. And he doesn't care if the players, he doesn't care about the locker room and his players' affection. He's here for something bigger than that. He's here to turn this country into, a global soccer power, to change the culture and the foundation and the way we approach the game. And he's not here to coddle players. And I think that's probably part of his plan. And we're seeing both sides of it. We're seeing the downside of it too. And certainly the way I feel like American fans bristled when they saw or heard what Jurgen said at halftime maybe shows some of the culture clash that's at play here and what kind of makes this thing so fascinating.
And some people might say that's a good thing. That
exactly.
A huge reason for why Klinsmann was hired was he walks into a room and I'm Jurgen Klinsmann.
Yep.
And that's, and he doesn't – I always thought it'd be cool, actually, if they had, Super Bowl rings, World Cup winner rings, where – you're Jurgen Klinsmann, you walk into a room and you got your World Cup winner ring on, this big fat piece of gold, and people see that. And even if he doesn't wear something like that, which I would love, people know it, they feel it. And that goes a long way. And that's something that it's just something about him. And so, yes, I'm sure Sunil Gulati hired him in large part for that reason.
Everyone should Google Didier Drogba Champions League ring.
That's great, isn't it?
Because he did that. Didier Drogba when Chelsea, I don't know why I remember this, but maybe I read it somewhere when he signed with Montreal, but yeah, he bought these really tacky, awful,
awesome
Champions League winners rings for Chelsea teammates when they won it. And they're hysterical, and everyone should go Google that right now.
I think you said awful, but I think you meant awesome. Yeah, I remember that. That was awesome. Wow. Well, that felt cathartic. That was good. That's good. I agree. And I think we're at it's a bit of a breaking point one way or the other, October 10th, right? Like, we will either get to the point where now he really will have to answer if they don't lose or if they don't beat Mexico. And if they do, then, you know, let's throw a ticker tape array.
Well, I would also add here, October 10th is a day of judgment for Jurgen Klinsmann as the U.S. men's national team coach, but also as the technical director, because that same day is the decision day when the U.S.'s berth or lack thereof in the 2016 Olympics will also be determined. So in Sandy, Utah, if the U.S. gets to that CONCACAF qualifying semifinal, which they didn't 4 years ago, then they have a chance to qualify under Andy Herzog, Klinsmann's handpicked coach, his right-hand man. And that's a big day, actually, for the youth national team ranks. If the U.S. men were to miss two straight Olympic games, that's a problem, you know? It's not as maybe big a headline as the USA-Mexico game that day, but it's also important for Jurgen Klinsmann, the technical director, who, you know, it's his responsibility for development and a philosophy and all of these important things to be happening. And if the U.S. were to miss out on the Olympics, that would be pretty devastating.
Well, don't forget, Germany hasn't made the Olympics since 1988.
But it's different here. It's different because if you're a European, if you're in UEFA, I think there's less of a penalty. And I think for that age of player for the U.S., I think it is important to have the experience of a tournament. I was talking about this with Landon Donovan in Boston about his experience in the 2000 Olympics in Sydney, where the U.S. got to the semifinals. And he said it was really important in his development to be part of the pressure of an international competition. The Olympics matter more in the U.S. Olympic soccer, I think, matters more in the U.S. than in other countries. And Donovan said this, that being an Olympian was just as important to him as playing in a World Cup, which was somewhat surprising.
Well, October 10th, I'm sure it's already circled on the calendar. Klinsmann with some decisions to make personnel-wise, too. Jordan Morse, he was called up for the friendly against Mexico. You would have thought he'd be a shoo-in to start in Olympic qualifying. But Klinsmann, Grant, when you asked him, said he wasn't sure yet what he's doing. Now, does that mean he really isn't sure? I don't know. But he's one to watch. Gideon Zlalem just got his first run out with the U-23s this week. We'll see if he gets called in. A lot of talent on that level. And there was a lot of talent last time, too. I think we can all agree that it would be a colossal disappointment if they're not able to navigate through CONCACAF, which has a, it's not just two berths, it's two and a half. They get to go into a playoff against Colombia, I believe it is. If they win the third place game, if, you know, things go down that road. Anyway, exciting times in U.S. soccer. Definitely we're taping this September 10th, so 1 month from today. Get ready. I'm going to take a quick break. Kind of reset our energy level. Got a little high, so we're gonna come back to a little equilibrium and then come back with some talk about Boca River. Might not expect that from us. The European soccer season has already kicked off fall sports season, but there's this other league that seems to draw some attention here or there, and the NFL is finally back, starting with Thursday's game between the New England Patriots and the Pittsburgh Steelers. And with that, it's your last chance to join FanDuel for the opening weekend. Now you can play with up to $200 in bonus cash with our code PLANET. You've probably heard of FanDuel somewhere before, but here's what it's all about. FanDuel is the leader in one-week fantasy football with more winners and more payouts than any other site. They will pay out over $75 million a week this football season. A lot of people miss out on the fun of fantasy football because the whole season is too much of a time commitment. FanDuel is the perfect solution. You can draft a team anytime and drop into tournaments for weekly cash prizes. Entry fees start at just $1, and there's a league for everyone. Over a million players have won money playing fantasy sports on FanDuel, and now it's your turn. So go to FanDuel.com and click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, use our code PLANET, and sign up now. And there's a special offer for new users. For every dollar you deposit, FanDuel will match it up to $200 that gets earned as you play. That's a bonus of up to $200.
The offer is only good for the first 50 people that use the code PLANET today, so don't get left out. FanDuel.com, where every day is a new season. That's FanDuel.com. Try it out today. All right, we're going to close, take a little bit of a detour here and talk about one of the world's biggest rivalries that might not get the same headlines or same attention as a Real Madrid, Barcelona, but Boca Juniors, River Plate in Argentina. The last time these teams met, River Plate players were pepper sprayed off of the field at the Bombonera. River Plate wound up winning Copa Libertadores. After that, they were awarded that game on a 3-0 decision, and then went on to win the entire tournament. Now they meet in Argentina's top flight. And it's a pretty big game. Pretty late in the season, Boca Juniors is actually a point behind San Lorenzo, just lost to them, so to fall out of first place. So anyway, there's implications at play here, but it's also just a massive event. I mean, these games, they tend to get out of hand, at least in the stands, and then on the field you get, you know, the intensity of a big rivalry. Carlos Tevez back at Boca Juniors, that's part of this all now. I know both of you guys have actually been to Boca River games, so I'm curious to hear your experiences, Grant. I'll start with you. Just what was it like?
It was amazing. I consider Argentina to be my adopted country. Long story short, I first went there in 1994 for 3 weeks, traveled with Boca Juniors fans overnight, the hardcores, to a game in Rosario, wrote about it for my college paper, just had an amazing experience. Went back a year later in the summer of 95, lived in Buenos Aires for 3 months, did my senior thesis in college on politics and soccer in Argentina, saw a ton of games. I'm a Boca Juniors fan, and I have no problem saying that. I think Argentines are the most passionate soccer fans in the world, and I think a good reason for why I do what I do today is connected to the experiences I had in Argentina. This is a bucket list game, a bucket list rivalry, Boca River. And if you are a soccer fan and ever get the chance to go to Buenos Aires, take it, go, sit in the stands, soak it up. There's so many great rivalries in sports around the world, but Boca River is right near the top, in my opinion. I went to a game where I was with the Boca fans at River, a game that Boca won, and yes, it's you're a little on edge, but that's part of what makes it great. And just to be there in the days leading up to the game and be part of the culture, just a tremendous experience.
That game is Sunday night at the Monumental at I believe it's 5:15 Eastern. Brian, what was your experience like down there? Which stadium did you see it at?
I've been to both stadiums, but I saw Boca River at La Bombonera, and it was 10 years ago. It was 2005, and I had a friend who was spending the year in Argentina, so I went down to visit him, and it was a crazy day. I mean, we made arrangements through a contact, a friend of a friend of my friend's, who had us go to some hostel and then picked us up in a van, and you know, the guy, are you here for Boca River? And we're like, yeah, and he's like, get in the van. always get in the van, kids. I guess that's the lesson.
No.
And you know, various concentric circles of security to get through, and we got our tickets, and then we escaped back out and just wandered the streets around La Bombonera, and everybody's grilling, and there's just this kinetic energy about the place, and then the game itself is everything you can imagine. It's Boca won 2-1. Actually, Guillermo Scalotto scored the opening goal. And then with about 10 minutes to go, Chelo Delgado scored on a 30-yard free kick to give Boca the 2-1 win. And the response to that, the other amazing thing I've done in South America was Iguazu Falls, did it after the World Cup. And you stand in whatever it's called, the mouth of the devil, and you're surrounded by the waterfalls. And it's a noise and an energy the likes of which you've never experienced in your life, and the closest thing to that was La Bombonera after that goal. I mean, it was cascades of people. I don't know how they survive. They're just trampling each other. And it was amazing, and I'll never forget it. And I lost my camera a few days later, so I have no photos, which is kind of the one sad part. But
Pixar never happened, man.
Great, and I'm jealous of Grant of his experience down there. I was there for maybe 10 days, went to a bunch of games, but haven't been back. Actually, one more thing. Later that day, my buddy and I went to see Independiente.
Nice.
So we did a doubleheader.
Nice.
Yeah. So anyway, Boca River is incredible. I agree. Bucket list.
Yeah. It's just... It's different stadiums too. If you go to Boca Stadium, it's in a maybe a little bit rougher part of town in La Boca. If you go to the River Stadium, it's where the World Cup final was played in 1978. It's a little newer, it's bigger, a little less atmosphere because you're a little farther away from the field, but not much. I mean, it's still awesome. And just the things that Argentine fans do. Argentine fans are basically the gold standard for fans around the world. When I did a road trip of Mexican soccer stadiums back in 07, basically they did all the same things in the stands that the Argentine hardcore fans do, like rushing in waves toward the field when your team scores a goal, or even the songs that they sing. I actually wrote a story about this in the 2002 SI swimsuit issue, where it was a Latin America theme, and I went and wrote about Argentine soccer, wrote about my experiences with the Boca Juniors fans. I think there's still a link up on SI.com.
I'm incredibly jealous of both of you guys. I've actually never been. I was just talking to a friend of mine, though, not a big soccer guy at all, but he did study in Argentina, and so he actually ended up going to a Boca River game, and he made the mistake of treating it like an American college football game and tailgating beforehand and you know, being not sober. And the people that he was with from Argentina were telling him, what are you doing? Like, you don't want to be drunk. You kind of need to know, you know, where you're at right now. Like, it's going to get hectic. And he just absolutely clueless, like culture shock, basically. And I remember also too, he was telling me, I forget which stadium he saw this at. It might've been Boca. That, you know, they go and they go park in this lot or something that, you know, that it's just a huge lot and a lot of people.
There's a big field next to La Bombonera, and that's sort of like the tailgate area, for lack of a better word, that's off to the side of the stadium, and it's full and it's awesome before a game.
Maybe that's what it is. But like, in something so big, I think, like, you know, it's however much money it is to pay, and it's run by, according to him, you know, the kind of the seedy underworldy mafioso type, and so, you know, he asked, like, what if we don't pay, can we just park here? And the people he was with are just like, we don't know what that's like. You just pay. You just you don't make that mistake. So it just seems like just an event, you know, out of a storybook. And it's awesome that you guys have been there. One day, I'll make the excursion. Super Clásico this Sunday, Boca Juniors, River Plate. Any final thoughts?
You know, I'll be down doing the Orlando Kansas City MLS game this weekend.
Almost rivalry wise, it's getting there.
The return of Graham Zusi to his hometown,
and Dom Dwyer, the war of words,
that's
the
true.
Tampering.
That is true. They have a nice little rivalry going there.
Yeah, we're working on something.
And I would say this: I like going to Orlando games. I know they're struggling on the field right now, but you know, they're averaging 32,000 fans a game this year, second in the league behind Seattle, and they have developed a nice fan culture down there. And I always enjoy going down.
Another game to watch, I think, this weekend, Sunday, Toronto, New England. Two teams that are certainly talented enough that if they go on a run, could see them in an MLS Cup final or deep in the playoffs come the fall. So that's a game I'm intrigued by.
Yeah, New England kind of getting back on where they were last fall after a tough summer. One tie-in between Boca River and MLS, River Plate's coach, Marcelo Gallardo, former DC United superstar.
Sterling career in DC.
another one of DC's fabulous foreign signings over the past dozen years.
Hey, it's Italian. It works.
It works.
Well, with that Sterling bit of trivia, I think we're going to call it a day. I want to thank Tim Howard again for taking the time to join us. Thank you guys, Grant and Brian, for some spirited talk. Alex Abnos, our stud producer, thank you. I am Avi Creditor, and we will talk to you guys next week on the Planet Football Podcast.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.